Your internet says it's
unstable. If the sound continues to cut out, I'll just ask everybody to turn their videos off, because that's sometimes easier.
It is indeed.
On the bandwidth.
Okay, I shall take my video off.
No.
Oh.
No, I shall. Will it make any difference if your microphone's slightly closer to your mouth? Or is that the set place?
Oh, go.
In case if anybody hasn't met a chambra before.
This is what meditation does to you. How's that?
It's the actual... we keep talking.
Okay, so... This couple, they discovered their baby wasn't theirs, and so the wife, you know, was very upset. The husband, the father of the child, or so-called father of the child, said, "You should have known that. Don't you remember when we left the maternity ward that the baby pooped in its pants, or in its, what they call them, the diapers, whatever it was. And I told, you told me, darling."
Nappies.
Nappies, okay, thank you. What would I know? I'm a muck. And so you told me, darling, take the baby back in the hospital and get it changed. And that's what I did. I changed the baby.
Okay,
very good. You've had enough already? Is that okay?
Yeah, that's excellent, Ashan, thank you.
Okay.
I'm just going to...
That's not a naughty joke, so that should be okay.
Okay, sorry. I can't see my clock. We're at 7 o'clock yet?
7:02.
Okay.
Hello, buddy.
We're 2 minutes late. Welcome, Ashan. Welcome, Ashan Brown, and I'll do the introductions. I'm emceeing for the night. So, first of all, Ashan Brown, we are blessed to have people from all around the world here tonight.
Yeah, I see
them. We've broken all records tonight. We have 30 participants.
30?
We have people from across Australia as well.
Yeah, we see people from Hong Kong.
In the middle of the desert, Nathan. And we have Upakshar from Adelaide, and then we have someone from Indonesia, Singapore, Germany, Hong Kong, Japan... Armadale.
Where's that?
Hong Kong again.
Where's Armadale?
I can't even see you all now. So Martha in the US is with us every week.
Oh,
so it's proving very popular from around the world to be on Zoom and meditate. So thank you to everybody who's here. Some people are new and have not been before. So I'll talk you through what happens. So this group is officially called the Armadale Meditation Group, but we've unofficially called it the Armadale International Meditation Group, without asking Ashan Brown for permission. And we've been going for well over 30 years, and there's a couple of us who are original members of the group. And the group is run by the Buddhist Society of Western Australia, and we're here every Tuesday evening from 7 till 8:30. We used to meet in the hospital, but we're not allowed in the hospital at this stage and probably not for the rest of the year, the way things are going. So we're online, and so it's wonderful to have you all here. One of the blessings of this group is that we have senior monks from Bodhinyana Buddhist Monastery, from the Theravada tradition, come and talk to us, and tonight is a special night.
Ta-da.
Because we have what he calls himself the dictator, but
I never said that.
The director of the Buddhist Society of Western Australia, Singapore, Melbourne, Victoria, I don't know,
North Korea.
Nine of them. He's taken over the world. And he's also the abbot at Bodhinyana Monastery and our spiritual director. So to have him spend the time with us this evening is absolutely wonderful. And we will start by chanting the Metta Sutta. I will share the words of the Metta Sutta on screen, and then we'll come back and Ashan Brown will introduce us to how to meditate, because some of us still haven't quite got it.
Really, after all these years.
Yeah, they can know, wouldn't they? And then Aisha will give us a talk. So if Aisha, everybody's on mute except for you, and I will mute myself and Mali. And so we only hear you chanting, because when we all chant together, we sound terrible. So we just let you do the chanting, and then I will come back to you. So I'm going to share my screen and then hopefully mute myself. Here is my screen, so you should all be able to see the Metta Sutta.
Yes. Okay. So now we can chant the Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, or meeting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, freed from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good. Excellent.
Thank you, Ajahn. Over to you. If you need anything, just ask, please.
Really? Me? Oh, yes. Can I please? The other day, somebody asked me, they had $300. And they said to me, this is a true story, they said, Ajahn Brahm, we have $300, said, soon to become an ordained nun. Oh, what can I get you for $300? And it was weird, because I wanted to get something, just, you know, because to make her happy, give an opportunity to do something. But I couldn't think of anything I wanted. So after a day or two, I told her, I said, no, I don't need anything. And I thought, what a wonderful thing that is. There were people, they give you $300, it's a lot of money. What do you want for that? Nothing. It's a wonderful thing that as a monk, trained for many years, you don't want things. You don't need anything. And that's actually the essence of meditation. Please don't try and achieve things in meditation. Otherwise, you'll just get another headache. Don't try and judge yourself you're not getting anywhere in meditation. You're not supposed to get somewhere. You're supposed to be here and be free. Free of things like wanting and needing. Which is one of the reasons why I often call it learning how to relax. Uh-oh, it says your internet connection is unstable again. But hopefully you can hear me. But anyway, learn how to relax to the max. And that's not a joke. That is a lot of times how I meditate. I sit down, close my eyes, and learn how to relax. Many of you have heard me doing this before. When I do guided meditations, first of all, just to learn how to relax your body. Because people are more aware of their body than they are of their emotional content. And so it's easier to learn your body, how to relax it, make it peaceful. And learning how to relax your body is the first part of meditation, even how the Buddha taught. He said, first of all, when you're meditating, you should do the mindfulness of the body first of all. Before you even go on to things like the breath or anything else, learn how to relax the body. Because sometimes people are trying to meditate and they've got an ache here, a pain there, they're not comfortable. They can see just how people in Asian countries meditate, sitting in full lotus with a straight back. But can you do that? You just torture yourself. And Buddhism, especially meditation, is nothing about torture. It's kind, compassionate, mindful, and learning how to relax everything. So that's what I do, and that's what how I teach. Relaxing your legs, first of all, so you feel your legs. And it's amazing, after some time, you can get much more awareness of your muscles, your bones, and everything which is in there. When I was a kid, I remember seeing on the TV, it's a long time ago, I've been a monk 47 years now, but I've still got a good memory, and this guy had a bare tummy, and he would actually move all the muscles, and the whole body would move up and down. It looked a bit gross, but it was funny as well. And how can you do that? And simply, he was so aware of the muscles in his body, and he learned how to move muscles which I'd never even dreamt you could move. And this actually tells you something about your body. Much of it you're not really aware of because you don't need to be. But once you start to learn meditation, it's amazing. You can relax. I'm doing this now, I'm relaxing my toes. And they're actually relaxing. You can feel them, they're getting more easy. And of course, being a monk, sometimes we're not quite sure what we eat during the day because we don't cook it, we don't order it. It looks nice, and we put it in our tummy and hope for the best. And so sometimes you get tummy aches. But I've learned over the years, if you've got a tummy ache and tightness in your stomach, you'll be mindful of it and you're kind to it and you relax it. the aches and pains disappear. And to me, that's a huge benefit, because you don't have to take too many medications. Why is it hardly any medications? The only medication I take regularly is vitamins. But only vitamin T and vitamin C. Vitamin T, cup of tea. Vitamin C, a cup of coffee. The two vitamins which I take regularly. And they work, you feel it straight away. So I'm in pretty good health, you know, believe it or not. So I can feel my body. I know how it is. You can actually feel when it's tight, just relax it. You don't worry about it. You can be at ease with it. And that mindfulness, together with the kindness, gives you encouragement because it works. You can feel it in yourself, an ache or a pain somewhere, and relax it until the ache or pain disappears. There are many people who, when they have things like all these different types of cancers, they do meditation, mindfulness. If they do it properly, it has a huge effect. And my evidence for that is every year I go off to the, used to be called the Cancer Support Association. It changed its name many times, now it's called Solaris Cancer Care, over in Cottesloe. Been going there for years. I've never had cancer. But I've taught a lot of people how to relieve their cancer, even overcome it, and disappears. I don't know many of you remember that wonderful, internet unstable, that wonderful gentleman called George the Cockney. He used to come to the Armadale group. And when he came to this place, I had to translate from what he said for the other monks, because I was the only one who could understand him. A lovely man. But that's how he overcame his lung cancer, by meditating. And just in about 1 or 2 weeks, it was a bit of an extreme case, but he did it. So there's something there. With the meditation, you can learn how to relax your body, ease your body. So many inflammations, so many. I have this letter somewhere. A lady had Alzheimer's. Arthritis. And she sent me this beautiful letter, which, you know, I will never forget. It makes me emotional because somehow or other you help this woman get her life back. Because she was in Eastern Europe somewhere, and her arthritis was so bad, she had to take these very heavy medications just to survive. And just to get through the day, they had bad side effects. But eventually, the side effects were getting worse, the arthritis was only just bearable. So she tried doing the type of meditation which I was teaching. And she wrote this wonderful letter back to me saying, thank you, thank you, thank you. I don't need the medication anymore. Because my arthritis is gone. I never thought that was possible. It went because of the way she was meditating. She said, now I can live a sort of full life in these years of my life. I think she was getting middle-aged, elderly. So imagine when you're responsible a little for that, giving good advice. That creates so much happiness inside of me. It also reaffirms that this stuff actually works. So little by little, we can become very, very peaceful, healthy individuals. Now we start with our body because that is important to you. You can get very quick confirmation how this works, that it does work. And then later, we go to our mind, this inner world, our emotions. And we do exactly the same. We're aware of what's happening inside. In this moment, right now. And of course you can be aware of this moment, right now. But if you want this moment to be like this or like that, you're creating more stress. That's not how to meditate at all. You know this moment. You accept it. It's here. Don't try and get rid of it. Don't try and change it. Don't try and aim for something more deep or more or less painful. is here right now, be with it. Because the way I was taught that all these mind states which you have, they're teachers. And if you skip class, you don't pay attention when the teacher is giving you the lesson. You have to come back again and do it all over again. So you're just with what's happening now. But sometimes that's hard. It's painful or difficult. What should you do? There's only one thing to do. You care for this moment. This beautiful human attribute of compassion and kindness, caring. And I think that you all have done that before. You know what caring is. And multiply that by 10 or by 100. I mean, really care for this moment. And as strange things happen, just when you really care for parts of your body which are aching, parts which are sick, parts which are so tense. Even if it's my tummy, if it's sick because I ate the wrong food or something. You care for it, give it so much compassion and kindness, and it just relaxes. Aches and pains disappear. That's what I've found. I'm sure that if you're with someone you really love, could be like, you know, the old days when you were a kid. You may have had this experience with your kids, when they're just really upset. Something emotional or physical has happened to them, and as they're crying their eyes out, they run up to you, you just put your arms around them, give them a big, big hug. A real hug of kindness. So that kid feels safe, because that's their mum, the dad, who's hugging them. And when they feel so safe, they can relax a little bit. And in that relaxation, that sense of safety, and they've had great experiences with the mum and dad before, they're safe, and they help, they cure. A lot of times, that pain disappears. Your kid stops crying, and the ache, the pain, the trauma, whatever it was, gets less and less and less and less. And that's what you do to your own body. You love it to bits, until it relaxes so much, even if it's injured. The pain diminishes enormously. Even in the sutras, the Buddha said that the emotional, there's two parts to pain, emotional and physical. And the emotional part is the greatest part, by far. I would say about 90%. Physical is there. But the emotional response, that's the one which really hurts. And of course, I've heard many stories about that, but this is how we learn how to... Okay, this story is relevant here. The time when I had a very, very bad toothache. And maybe you can't really appreciate that in those days in the forest monasteries, there was no electricity, no telephones, no medicine, no aspirin or Panadol or anything. And at night time, you just left in this forest with this incredibly bad toothache, no way you could sleep or do anything. And the solution which I found, tried meditating, but I was trying to get rid of that toothache when I was meditating. That was the wrong idea. I was just learning. But I always remembered, and the people like my teacher Ajahn Chah would always tell me, let go. Let go. Internet connection is unstable, but you have to let go of it. And it comes back again. So, let go, let go. And so because I had no choice, there was no place to run to, I couldn't stand it. Incredible pain of the toothache anymore. And for the first time I did let go. And that was amazing. It was, you know, one of those experiences you have in life which shock you. One moment you just don't know what to do, you can't stand it any longer, it really, really, really hurts. The next moment there's no pain at all. And you're blissing out. And so those experiences actually show me that the mental part, the emotional part of pain is by far the greatest. And if you learn how to let go of that, you're sweet. That's what you do in meditation. You might be tense, tired, aching, whatever, fed up with how life is treated you, can't go anywhere because of COVID or whatever. But you sit down there and let go with kindness. And then everything becomes so beautiful, so peaceful. And you realize that this is the way of meditation. You don't do it. you let go and meditation happens. You don't aim to get rid of things. You're with everything. You find it's trying to get rid of things, trying to get somewhere else. That striving, that is what causes the tension inside your mind. And when we have our meditation, this is not the same as going to work or studying. This is the totally opposite, learning how to be. Learning how to not do anything. Learning how not to control. The last little story, I forget exactly who told me this anecdote, but I cherish it and I repeat it often. One of the meditators who was on a retreat with me, she was controlling too much. So I told her, imagine when you're meditating, you're in a car, you're in a driving seat, and Ajahn Brahm is in the passenger seat, and the car is not behaving properly, and it's increasing in speed, and there are no brakes, and we're going really fast, and there's a big sign there, beware, sort of cliff, and you cannot stop the car, we're going to go over the cliff. There's a big cliff, very steep, very long way down. And you start to say, help me, Ajahn Brahm. And I say, take your hands off the steering wheel. Take your feet off the pedals. I can't, we'll kill ourselves. Take your hands off the steering wheel, feet off the pedals. And anyway, she had this dream when this was happening. And she remembered that advice. And she said that she was really scared in the dream, but she followed the advice. Took her hands off the steering wheel, feet off the pedals. And she had me in the passenger seat. Must be really bad karma if she kills Ajahn Brahm. But then she dreamt very clearly. We went over the cliff. It was a really long way down. And we were hurtling to certain death. Or even worse, long-term injuries. But she wanted to grab the wheel again. So, take your hand off the steering wheel, feet off the pedals, let go. And she did that. And when we hit the bottom, the car just leveled out almost perfectly. But then she noted there was a very sharp right-hand turn, impossible to take. She wanted to get on the wheel again. So, hands off the steering wheel, feet off the pedals. And the car automatically made this perfect, sharp, right-hand turn. And they were going on the level, and the level ground in the car, no injury at all. And she told me that with great glee. She said, yes, I did it, it worked. That was only a dream, I said. Now see if you can do that in your meditation. But if ever you are driving me somewhere, I'm not going to allow you to drive the car because you may try and think that works in busy traffic. That works in meditation. You let go and you see what happens. And you'll be surprised how your mind calms down. And things get so peaceful and you realize just how meditation is so simple. And so powerful when you don't get involved. You're the passenger. So you just enjoy the ride. And the ride is fantastic. You sit there because you're not doing anything, you get very peaceful. Because you get peaceful, everything settles down. And it gets very joyful and amazing what happens inside when you don't try. When instead of trying, striving, complaining, when you let go. Simple. So anyway, I am now going to do the guided meditation for you. It's 7:30 on the machine here, so it must be 7:30 in real life. So if you would get yourself in your meditation position, and I will lead the 30 minutes guided meditation. Here we go. And I can see many of you on the screenshots, but I think that you are just the still shots. So I think that what a great meditator you are, because you aren't moving. But it's actually not live shots, it's still shots. Maybe, I don't know. Anyway, here we go. So please get yourself nice and comfortable. I will lead you for roughly 20 minutes, 25 minutes, then be quiet. And then when I start speaking again, it'll be close to the end of the meditation period. For those of you who get very deep, if you get enlightened, just carry on meditating. And don't pay any regard to what I'm saying. So closing your eyes. With your eyes closed, you find you have more opportunity to be aware of your body. It's like mindfulness is not disturbed by having to see things. So now I'm aware of my legs, especially my feet. I don't usually sit on a chair. I love sitting on the ground, but today sitting on a chair, because otherwise you won't be able to see me. And I feel my legs. I establish mindfulness of my legs. And to do that, I ask my legs, "How are you?" It's a very simple act of compassion to the people you live with. By asking, "How do you feel? Anything I can do to make you more comfortable?" People you care about, this is what you do with them. You give them attention, trying to help them. Even just saying, just "How are you?" It's a powerful act of compassion. So I'll say, "How are you?" to my feet. My feet know me for such a long time. They answer me. So I just need a bit of adjustment. And I listen to parts of my body. I don't try and control them. I try and care for them. And when I move my feet, just adjust them this way and that way. I keep my awareness down there. And I get the answers. Yeah, they're actually feeling much better now. More comfortable. Then I allow my awareness to climb up my legs, as it were, going past my ankles or my calves. Even though there's nothing much going on in my calves, I'm still aware of them. I don't take them for granted. And I feel these wonderful sensations as my awareness sweeps up my legs, then to my knees. I was sitting down meditating a lot this afternoon, so my knees are a little bit sort of tight. I'm just kind to them and relax them. Just like sometimes things are stretched, pulled apart, and I just loosen both ends. If anything is squashed, I try and expand them. Until I know the feelings in my knees. And they get very loose and comfortable. Sometimes it's like I've soaked them in a bath of hot water. They're really open and at ease. They feel great. And past my knees, up my thighs, huge muscles. They do a lot of work, so of course they might be tired. They may be a bit stretched or sore. So I feel them. These are like my family, my friends, my loved ones, parts of my own body. And I care for them. And sometimes it's not even doing anything. It's just looking at them and wishing them well. They realize that they're cared for. And not just abused, exploited, taken for granted. Can I get to my buttocks, my bottom? And those are muscles which are often under pressure. Just sitting down a lot, as a monk does, you can feel the pressure on those muscles as I'm sitting. Even though I've got a nice soft office chair, still there's pressure there. So I adjust the buttocks to make them really nice and easy. I've got to adjust the chair to office chairs and move. And then once the buttocks are, that's pretty good. Then I move up to the back. If you had your eyes open when I was doing this, I'd stretch my back tonight, move it away from the backrest. It feels much more comfortable. And I know the sort of comfort which is good for meditation, what's good to comfort to go to sleep. But for me, I just like to diet anyway, to keep the back straight. Feels much stronger. And I also look at the internal parts of my body as I move up the body. And these are where all the very sensitive and very important organs are located. I don't need to know their names or what they're actually called. They're all connected up together anyway. I just feel them as I move up. See if there's any tight spaces. And if there are, I pause there. And I relax them. Sometimes I don't know what particular organ I'm relaxing, but I'm relaxing them. They feel so much better. And if you have ill health, then just spend a lot of time on this. Learning just how to bring ease to parts of your body which you can't even reach with your fingers, but you can reach with your kindness. Your lungs, and even your heart. Just wishing it well. They go right up to the top to my shoulders. I get to the shoulders and I know how to relax my shoulders. I've been try this and try that, experimented, trial and error until you become very skilled. And learning how to relax yourself, to loosen any tightness or tension there. And I go down my arms. Even though I don't remember any injuries to my arms, but nevertheless, I go down those arms and just relax everything. If you've had a COVID shot in your arm or something, you can go past there and just, if you have any aches or pains, just relax everything. Let the medication do its job. You feel safe. You've got your own kindness protecting you. You go past your elbows. You can feel them. Make peace with them. Move down past your forearms and your elbows, your hands, and ask your hands if they want to be adjusted. Mine do. I'm just going to adjust them. You know, sometimes it's like people, you ask how they are, give them a call or email or something, and just the fact that you've spent some time with them makes a lot of difference to their sense of well-being. It's the fact that my hands have been attended to. They relax more. I'm not imagining this, I've been doing it for years and it's true. Just being with something, even an injured part of your body, just be with it and it relaxes. And then I go back up past my shoulders to my neck. You heard me coughing, I think, twice during the chanting. That's because I do have hay fever and the wattles in the monastery are just fully blooming now. And so, you know, that gives out some pollen or something which affects me. Only slightly, it's not a big deal. But if I can feel any irritation in my throat, I just go right towards it. I'm not afraid of things which irritate me. you run right towards it and it's like giving a big hug. Be kind to it, poor old throat. When I do that, I'm not afraid of it. I can be kind to it. It's amazing how the irritation lessens. Still there, but hardly at all. It feels actually quite comfortable, even nice staying there. I'm going to go further up to my face. On my face I can feel. I can feel the muscles around my eyes especially, not so much my forehead, but a tiny bit of the forehead. Nose and mouth. Those muscles are used so much, they do get tired, they get stressed. Now relax them all. How you relax that? Try an hour. You soon learn. Because mindfulness gives you the feedback. So one of the amazing things about mindfulness, it's not just being aware, it's just noticing how what you think or how you look affects the physical body. You see that. You soon learn how to look at things in your body, which relaxes everything. Now my face is pretty much relaxed. And the whole body. Now I'm aware of the whole body. Sitting here on a chair, feeling pretty good. At this point, I introduced many years ago the fact that if, here it comes, it feels delightful. I'm describing just how I feel inside. The body nicely relaxed. There's this pleasure, this delight of relaxation. I enjoy this because I know it's really healthy for me. Everything relaxes even more. And I get deeper into this moment. Because this moment right now, always here, supposed to be, no past, no future, just now. How do you do this? Because the present moment becomes so delightful. It attracts me in. I don't use effort. I just do letting be. It's beautiful, beautiful, relaxed body. I indulge in it for a minute or two, and then I go to the mind, go deeper in. And the mind, what am I talking about? Just to learn how to see what I've called the peaceometer. How peaceful are you? Like looking at a thermometer. Really peaceful, it's like one. Agitated is 10. If you had to give the number right now, from 1 to 10, how peaceful are you or how agitated? And now, what causes that reading to go down closer to 1? What makes you peaceful? Present moment awareness, certainly. All the burden, the weight of your past. All the fear of your future. Please put those aside. Now is where your future is being made. So look after this present moment. You learn more from this moment than you ever learned from the past. So be in this moment. It's a place of freedom and peace. The other thing which calms you down is try not to focus on the words. Focus on the feelings. What does peace feel like? It's beyond words. When you haven't got a language that silences the inner conversation. You feel this moment. You know it. But now having no words to generate a conversation. And it is delightful. You can perceive the joy in this, the peace, the profound quality of silence. It tends to keep you there. And it grows deeper and deeper and deeper. Now's the time I'm going to be quiet. You enjoy the meditation for another almost 10 minutes. Enjoy.
getting close to the end of this meditation period. How do you feel inside? How much peace can you know? What does it feel like? How attractive is peace? Where does peace live? It never lives in perfection. It is an acceptance in this moment. Please start to come out from my meditation. Feel your body sitting here just so comfortable. Very rare your body feels so at ease as after a nice meditation. You understand why healing health happens. Your body is so at ease, it can re-energize itself. I'm now going to ring the gong three times. Ringing the gong is a symbol of drawing you out from meditation using the sense of sound. When you come out of meditation, please remember to smile. It takes some of that good energy out there into the outer life. Why not? Good. Okay. So now we usually have the opportunity for 30 minutes to talk about something. Often to answer a question which might have come up. So, Rachel, have you got a question ready for me?
I'll see if there's any questions in the chat box, Asha. Nice, so we can invite people to, anybody got a question? Maybe if you could pop it in the chat box, it would be easiest for us.
Here we go. I hope BSV will keep the online session even after the pandemic is over. Is the pandemic going to be over? Anyway, I'm sure we can do something. Very good. What else we got?
So, and there's no questions there, Ajahn, so maybe you could talk. Someone else, Martha, wants the group to continue. She has to leave now because goes to work. She'll listen on the phone. Maybe you could talk more about compassion, what it is, and how to develop it more, because you talked about the compassion to the moment and hugging the moment. It would be lovely to hear more about how to do that.
Sometimes that when people talk about things like kindness, compassion, we think we know what kindness is. So instead of just assuming that one understands compassion, I like to test my understanding of compassion on my own body first of all. To be kind to my legs, what does that mean? You know, for many years I thought that when I was sitting cross-legged on the ground that you weren't allowed to move. You just endure the aches and pains which come up. But you found that after a while that just made the meditation worse.
But what happened after reading some of the teachings of the Buddha is the Buddha said, middle way, not doing anything which tires your body, exhausts it, and fighting pain and sickness exhausts your body. So instead it was learning how to be kind, compassionate to your own body. And what actually is that? So my own body was my own experiment. That what I did was to take a part which was sick and just give it compassion. And when it gave it compassion, it always was something which relaxed the body, gave it a sense of ease. And I began to learn what compassion is by its results. The compassion was something which caused a sense of safety. And it's amazing just how we can actually frighten our own body. You know, you may have a lump somewhere in you, oh, it's cancer, oh, I'm going to die, ah! Instead of just saying, oh, it's just a lump somewhere in the body. And sometimes you have a cough, oh, that's COVID, oh, I better get tested, ah! And all it is just an irritation from some hay fever or something. You have a pain, ah, I'm dying. But sometimes we're just so scared, human beings. And unfortunately our society, with the best will in the world, just sometimes encourages that fear. We better go and get it tested, just in case. In case of what? You get things tested out of fear. And if you're very wise, you know the difference between testing something out of fear and testing something because you realize there's a problem there. That awareness of your own body just makes that distinction when you really do need to go see the doctor. So what we do usually is, when I'm ever sickly or aching, painy or whatever, I just notice my body. I get to know it. That's one great thing about being a monk. You do have some time. You do spend the time meditating a lot. So you do get to know your body and you do learn what compassion is. And compassion is what relaxes everything. A good example of that is people who suffer from insomnia. And there was a time, it's not recently, it's about 4, 5 years, 6 years ago. For some reason or another, I never worked out why, I found it difficult to go to sleep at night. And I eventually went to sleep, but quite late. And I totally overcame that with like compassion to my body. And the compassion was, okay body, if you don't want to go to sleep, that's fine. Fine by me, I'm not going to control you. I'm going to be kind to you. If you want to sort of lay down in bed and just without going to sleep, that laying in bed is one of the most comfortable positions I can ever get into during the night time. You've got nice cushions and mattresses. And in your bed, isn't it, just think about it now, it's a wonderful place to go and lie in. And I've got a beautiful pillow, it's my pillow, my head and me get to know each, and my head and the pillow get to know one another. Your own personal pillow, you snuggle up in there, put your blankets on, and it's nice and quiet. It's your bed. And I started to think, why am I wasting the most beautiful, comfortable time in my monastic day by going to sleep in my nice, comfortable bed? So I changed my attitude to actually to wanting to stay awake. I didn't want to go to sleep. Who wants to go to sleep in the most comfortable position? It's nice and snuggled in there, nice and cozy, nice and warm, no one is bothering you. You can sit in there just really relaxed to the max. So when I stopped trying to go to sleep, I just woke up in the morning. In other words, I went to sleep very, very easily. And you realize that I wasn't being compassionate to my body, I was trying to make it go to sleep. I was another control freak. And that's the opposite, very clear opposite there, is controlling is the opposite of compassion. Trusting is part of compassion. I've used this for such a long time, I trust it perfectly. I don't sort of doubt it. If I give kindness to my body, I can feel it relaxing. And I'm not just imagining this, it works. And so that means that I can be compassionate to my own body. And I train on my own body, learning how to be compassionate. even to the point, and I mention this in times like COVID and other times, that there are times in the day I just feel just not full energy. I ask my body, what do you want, body? I'm compassionate enough to listen to it, but I have to ask the question first of all. How are you? And it's a weird experience that sometimes, maybe just in the middle of the morning, I've had a good night's sleep, but my body tells me, I'm tired. It's not, I'm being honest to my body, my body's being honest to me. It's real. I don't know why, it's illogical. I've just had a nice night's sleep, no reason to be tired. But if I have the chance, it's another work day, I can go into my cave and just lay down on my mattress. And if it's a real thing, I just close my eyes and you go to sleep almost straight away. You wake up half an hour later, and you feel like so good, so energized, so different than when you went to bed. It's like my body is asking me, Ajahn Brahm, please, can you just take me to bed and have a nice sleep? And I listen, and I've done that so many times, I trust my body that I don't get sick. It's as if my body is telling me, well, this is what you need to do. It may not make any sense to you. It's not indulging. Ajahn Brahm, you need to take a rest. You may have some bug inside of you. You take a rest and we'll fix the rest of the problem up for you. And that means that you get energized and you get fit and healthy. That's a result of compassion. Compassion always leads to beautiful things. And you do that on your own body, and then you do that on your own monks. And I've got all these monks I'm supposed to be teaching or looking after. And I think you could ask them. I'm not a control freak. And if I do tell them to do something, then I feel, well, that's not really the right way to do things. I encourage them, inspire them. And with a lot of time with compassion. Hopefully all the monks know that I care for them. If it's something they need, something weird that they need, and it's going to work, fine, why not? In other words, that kind of compassion means that everybody who stays in a monastery like that does feel safe. They do feel protected, they're not abused. And sometimes you listen to some of the problems and you find innovative ways of dealing with them. And that has bad side effects, I must admit, when I deal with compassion rather than being quite critical of the monks when they misbehave. It doesn't mean we get too many monks in this monastery. So we've got heaps and heaps of monks and anicharikas and good as no one else in this monastery. But I don't mind, because it means the monks feel they're welcome here. And how many places in the world could you actually receive compassion, real compassion? And one of the times when I received compassion, really big compassion, was when I went to visit this monk. He was supposed to be fully enlightened, and I would probably say yes, he probably was a real fully enlightened monk, because I had all these questions I wanted to ask him. This was a monk, his name was Ajahn Tate. He actually came to Australia, to West Australia years ago, that's before I came. Amazing that he managed to get here. But anyway, that I went to go and see him. I first knew about him, not because he came here, but because when he went to the hospital in Bangkok, he had terminal cancer. And the King of Thailand was actually paying for his medical expenses. He had the best doctors, but nothing was working. So, only a few weeks to live. So he said, well, I'd rather die in my monastery than die in Bangkok. So he went up to the far northeast of Thailand, in the Nong Khai province, and his monastery, beautiful monastery on the banks of the Mekong River overlooking Laos. And they went up there to die, and it was about 20, 25 years later he finally died. In other words, he did his meditation, he lived a long, peaceful, happy life. But I had the opportunity to ask him all these questions. You have questions to ask monks and wise people and people you just really want to find the answers from, someone you really trust. And so I had to wait 1 or 2 days, I think, before I could get an appointment.
When I did go into Israel, that was one of the most memorable, you know, half an hour of my life. Because I went into the room with all these questions I wanted to ask. When I went in there, the questions evaporated. I was just sitting there like some dumb young monk, because he just blasted me with compassion, with kindness. I don't know how you can describe that, but the effect was that there's no more questions needed. You felt so peaceful, you felt so welcome and so safe. He didn't need answers to questions anymore. He felt so still, so happy. But I remember the one thought which did come into my mind was I'd have to get a team of water buffaloes with chains to drag me out of this place. I'm not leaving. And as whenever you get that compassion from something or somebody, just what a wonderful, precious gift it is. Sense of like safety and peace. And this is actually where the happiness comes from. You understand compassion by what it does for you. There's a beautiful effects. I was seeing in the chat, mind doesn't want to stop wandering. Well, let it wander. What's wrong with it wandering? But when it wanders, you go with it. You don't try and train it, restrain it. Where it goes, you go too. In other words, you're always with it. So in this present moment, it's not wandering at all. The simile which I give to explain this, I'm just doing this from the chat box, is that whenever I used to go travelling in aircraft, people said, just, oh, do you mind flying? I said, I don't fly. I just get in the plane, sit on my seat. The plane does all the moving. The plane does all the wandering. I just do the sitting. I'm always here. So it changes your perception of the mind wandering. What you're really saying is you want to be somewhere and your mind somewhere else. That is attention there. Instead of you wanting to be somewhere else, you be where your mind is. So you're aware of it in this moment. You're with it, rather than just fighting it, trying to make it be somewhere where you're not. Then I can go travelling on aircraft. I don't go travelling at all. I just sit down. Just like I'm sitting down now, I'm not going anywhere. The plane does the moving, I do the sitting. And that's a different perspective. The same different perspective of the wandering mind. Please don't fight the wandering mind. You're just abusing it. And that's why we wander more and more. When you're with it, you're being kind to it. When you're being kind to the mind, what's happening is the mind is becoming your best friend. For years and years I wondered, why does my mind wander? And of course it was because I had a bad relationship to my mind. I was a control freak. Just like you may have difficulty having a partner in life. They want to go playing golf or something, want to go meditating. You say, no, you can't do that, please. If you want to be with your partner, then you go meditating with them. You go play golf with them, I don't know. You don't have to be good. What it means is that you're with people. You're compassionate, kind, and then you want to be with one another. So my mind and I love being with one another. There's such beautiful times in the past. And it is true that when I go back to my cave where I live, the sit meditation is, my mind says, yeah, you're back again, you're not teaching, yeah, let's hang out together for a while. It's like being with a best friend. And who wants to wander away from a best friend? Here we go. I'm just reading the chats. Where is the mind gone when the Arahant passed away? Thank you. The mind was like a flame. And when the fuel of the flame is exhausted, where does the flame go? That was a question they asked the Buddha. What are you talking about? The flame doesn't go anyway. The flame was just caused by the heat and the fuel. When they get exhausted, or when the wind blows the heat away, the flame just goes out. And in the time of the Buddha, the word for a flame going out was nirvana.
word nirvana was not just a mystical word invented to describe some supernatural phenomena. It was a word which even children would understand. Mummy, mummy, the oil lamp is nirvana. Well, light it again. So your mind is just a process. It's got no essential core to it. It comes and goes because of fuel. When the fuel is exhausted, your mind nirvanas. Okay.
There's an earlier question that you haven't seen. Yeah. The Kishan from Adelaide was wanting to know what is Vipassana meditation.
What is Vipassana?
It's earlier.
Vipassana meditation is supposed to be that part of meditation where you get insights, where you see truths which you haven't seen before. But that Vipassana meditation, not separate from the rest of meditation. To tell you how this works, Vipassana and Samatha were a couple who lived together. Samatha is the word for calm, peace meditation. Vipassana is insight. So Vipassana and Samatha lived together, and one day they decided to go up Meditation Mountain. They took their two dogs with them. One of the dogs was called Loving Kindness, the other dog was called the Breath. People do meditation on the breath, they do mindfulness meditation, Vipassana meditation, Samatha meditation. So Sam, Vi and their two dogs went up Meditation Mountain. Sam went up there because he enjoyed the peace and the silence up Meditation Mountain. Vi went up there with her Canon camera because she wanted to take some really good shots. You got really incredible views on the top of Meditation Mountain. But what did the dogs go up there for? You know what dogs are like, they're far more simple. They went up there for the fun and joy of it. So the four of them went up Meditation Mountain, and when they got halfway, oh, it was so peaceful up there. Sam was enjoying himself. Vi was taking these incredible shots, could see so far. Meta the dog was enjoying herself, wagging her tail like it might fall off. And the breath actually started to disappear. Could you just see her? But anyway, when they got to the top of Meditation Mountain, wow, it was so still up there, so peaceful. I mean, peace is amazing, it's powerful, it's profound, it's deep. Wow, top of Meditation Mountain, that stillness was incredible. But Sam had a pair of eyes, he could see the view too. And Vi was taking these amazing shots. You wouldn't believe the powerful things you could see on the top of Meditation Mountain, the insights were incredible. But she could also enjoy the peace up there too. And little Meta the dog, oh, she was so happy up there. And Anapanasati, or the breath that disappeared on the top of Meditation Mountain, couldn't find it at all. Find it when you go down. So Meta, the joy, the bliss, the stillness, and the insights, they all go together. You cannot separate them. Insight leads to peace and is born of peace. Peace develops insight, insight develops peace. And the two of them are always accompanied, if they're real, this beautiful kindness, a loving kindness, incredibly joy and happiness. It's one of the reasons why I know this so well. But sometimes people who, they say they've got these great insights, but they're miserable people. Or people say they're very good meditators, they're very still, and they get so angry and upset and so demanding. They haven't got a clue what meditation is. Meditation is so joyful and peaceful and blissful. And, whoa, you can't get upset at anybody. So that's what Vipassana is. When Ajahn Chah used to say, he used to put a hand out and say, this is the front of the hand, this is the back of the hand, this is Samatha, this is Vipassana. He said, you can't have one without the other. The front and back of the hand. You try that. Anyway, Second question, dear Ajahn, is it true that Deva in certain realm can exist with pure consciousness only, without the five senses? Four. Thanks, Ajahn. Consciousness is never pure. Most say it's pure from the other five senses. But yes, that is true. That is what we call the jhana realms, the deep meditation realms. You can experience that in this life, and then you come back to your body in this life. So it can exist, but it's not pure consciousness. But it's just fifth conscious of mind without the other five senses. If you want to prove that for yourself, you can do that by going to some nice deep meditations. Really still. Just like the person, some of you may remember him. I don't know, do you remember Ron's story, Rachel? He was our treasurer once. Ron, story.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if he told you this part of his career. He was in the British Army just after the Second World War. He was a staff sergeant or something. But anyway, when he was in West Germany at that time, just after the Second World War and exercises, he would always get these really bad migraines. And he wasn't a Buddhist, he didn't know about meditation. The only way he could deal with those migraines is find a nice dark place to sit, usually a barn somewhere, and he said, go inside, go deep inside. And the pain of the migraine was so great that it just drove him deep inside his mind where he couldn't feel the migraine. And he knew it was a deep meditation experience, but he didn't know exactly how deep until he told me. On one occasion, he was had a terrible migraine, went into a barn, and the soldiers he was supposed to be leading just got another call, better leave straight away. And they forgot him. They left him in the barn. And then 5 kilometres down the road somewhere, they remembered they left their sergeant in the barn. So they went back to collect him. And he was just nice and deep in his stillness. And they just literally picked him up. He was just sitting there, picked him up and put him in the back of the army truck. And obviously soldiers are not very delicate. And so he didn't feel a thing. And he just came out of his meditation and he was in a truck. How the heck did I get in here? And they told him what had happened because they knew he did this before, they were used to it. But it really proved to him in his deep meditations, your five senses are gone. You can't feel people. They picked you up and put you in a truck. The noise of the truck and all the soldiers, they weren't quiet. He didn't hear anything. And he said it was very lovely how he escaped from his migraines that way. He said later on in his life, the migraines disappeared by themselves. And he said, that was wonderful that they disappeared, but he misses the deep meditation he used to get because of them. That's the truth, that's what happens in the deep meditation, just with the mind. You can't feel the senses in the body. You're still alive, but deep within. And that's sometimes when a person dies, they can go to those states. There's mind consciousness. There's sound consciousness, sight consciousness, smell, taste, and touch, and all gone. Not a bad place. Anyway, how do we not take on the soul? I missed that one now. How do we not take on the soul stress in the world that seems to be everywhere? It's not everywhere. Come to Bodhinyana Monastery. We don't have much soul stress here. It's not all in the world, but sometimes why do we focus on it? That is one of the reasons why I taught that simile of the two bad bricks in the wall. Part of that simile, that the full story. First time I laid bricks, two bricks were crooked and I was so upset by them I wanted to blow them up and start again. I wasn't allowed to, we couldn't afford it. And every time I saw that wall, every time I thought of it, remembered it, all I ever saw was two bricks. My eyes were attracted to faults and I couldn't see the bricks to the left, right, above and below. And that's why this gentleman came up to me. After 3 months of suffering, he said, it's a beautiful wall. And I said, what about those two bad bricks? He said, what about the 998 perfect bricks? The point was, I couldn't see those perfect bricks for 3 months. What I could see was that my mistakes. It's one of the reasons why people say it's a terrible world, lots of pain, lots of corruption, whatever. I ask you, are you just seeing the two bad bricks in the world? Can you not see the beautiful parts of the world? They're there. It just needs you not denying the fact there's a lot of problems and difficulties in this world. There's lots of incredibly kind, beautiful, generous, wonderful people. It's fun to be with, aren't they? So remember, just keep things in perspective. See the beautiful bits in the world, not just the two bad ones. Changes your life. Okay, what have we got here? Dear Anton, have I missed your answer? Is mind the same thing as consciousness, awareness? Oh, great, somebody. Consciousness is. Oh, that's Becky. Oh, no, that's someone else. Anyway, there are 6 different types of consciousness. There are 6 different types of consciousness. Sight consciousness, sound consciousness, smell consciousness, taste consciousness, and body consciousness, and mind consciousness. So mind is one of the consciousnesses. It's not all of them. And sometimes when you just have mind consciousness in a deep meditation, then you understand what mind consciousness is and how it interacts with the other consciousnesses. How it interacts with the other consciousnesses is what you see. You see something right now. And the next moment, you know you see it. So the mind tends to pick up objects from the other senses. You hear me, then you know you heard. It doesn't happen in the same moment. One comes right after the other. And that gives you the sense of the what many people feel is a continuity of consciousness. When you see something, when you hear it, when you feel it, there's something similar there. What the similarity is the mind consciousness. It picks up those other senses. Which is why we feel there's a continuity of consciousness rather than fragmentary moments of consciousness. And you may get a taste of what I mean, but you get into some deep meditation when mind consciousness is all that's left. That becomes pretty obvious.
Ashan, it's time to finish, but do you have time just to answer quickly the last 2 questions?
Well,
please don't send any more.
Yeah, okay. Dear Ajahn, I listen to your talks every day when I hike, walk in nature. They give me much joy. Can one overdose on Dharma talks? I'm happy to be brainwashed. Thank you for your generosity. No, you can't overdose on Dharma talks. You know, just as long as it brings you joy and happiness. If you're overdosing on Dharma talks and you feel just negativity, or if you have to listen to this, then that is doing too much. And also I say this because sometimes people are sick, sometimes people have to go to the toilet. If you need to listen to the Dharma talk on the toilet seat, that is fine. That is being respectful. You're respecting the Dharma talk, it's helpful for you. Ajahn, I'm a little stuck in my practice when I sit cross-legged. I'm able to get the breath to be quite subtle, but I want to move legs. When I practice lying down, I fall asleep. It's okay to move your legs when you're doing breath meditation or any type of sitting meditation. Remember, be compassionate. Your poor old body counts. Yes, if you move your legs, you go backwards a second or two in your progress in meditation, but you soon make it up. Maybe you lose a minute when you move your legs, but then you soon get back to where you were before with your peace, but now with no pain, and you go much deeper. Don't be afraid of having to move your legs if you really need to. Do we need to train ourselves to get more subtle breath within a shorter time frame before the body wants to move? No. Just all these needs to do this and needs to do that, keep it natural. And some days you know you realize the best thing to do is move. Sometimes you realize you don't need to move. So don't train yourself rigidly. You have to do it this way and not that way. Oh, I remember just sometimes people say, you're not sitting up straight. I was getting a deep meditation, nothing wrong with that. Sometimes you should put your left hand on top of your right hand. Your right hand must be on top of your left hand. Your fingers or thumbs must be slightly touching. That's a lot of BS. But BS does not mean Buddhist society, it means bullshit. In other words, there's so much rubbish that's taught about meditation. You feel what works for you. And now I'm in a fortunate position. I'm very seen, with a lot of disciples, written many books, I'm well regarded, so I can say these things now without people saying, oh, Ajahn doesn't know what he's talking about. I do know what I'm talking about. You can move your legs. You don't train yourself. You don't train your body. You train your compassion, your kindness. May your compassion and wisdom be really strong. Not your controlling. Last question. So to say, awareness refers to mind consciousness. It's part of mind consciousness, but awareness is... Can you hear me? Do you know you hear me? That's awareness. Okay. There we go. You've got an extra 4 minutes.
Thank you.
I won't charge you overtime.
Thank you.
It's nice to talk.
You can send us the extra bill, 4 minutes.
Okay, no trouble. Do you want to wrap up, Rachel?